This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 25th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 296. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I ward a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Investigative journalist Sam Cooper's testimony to a House of Commons committee on the Chinese Communist Party's interference, intimidation, and infiltration in Canada. And on the big deal feature, Duff Conacher from Democracy Watch, a cautionary tale about Canada's access to information system and unanswered questions about the RCMP's investigation into the SNC-Lavalin scandal. One of the highlights of the final week of Parliament before the summer break was an appearance by journalist Sam Cooper at the House Procedure Committee, which continues to study foreign interference. Cooper, the author of the book Willful Blindness, recently left Global News to launch his new company, the Bureau.News. Here is what he said in his opening statement on June 20th.
It's an honor to be called to testify. My name is Sam Cooper, and I am now reporting for my own journalism platform, The Bureau. The Bureau's first two stories are relevant to your examination today of information I have reviewed in documents regarding Beijing's, quote, threatening Canada's elected officials to deter criticism, end quote. First, I wish to inform the committee of how I collected knowledge on these matters in the past decade. While covering foreign investment in Vancouver real estate, I started researching foreign interference in connection to the public statements of former CSIS director Richard Fadden in 2010. In September 2014, for the Province newspaper, I authored a story titled, "Is China Influencing BC's Municipal Politicians?" The story, using access to information, examined CSIS documents. In March 2015, for the province, I authored another story titled, "Chinese Police Run Secret Operations in BC to Hunt Allegedly Corrupt Officials and Laundered Money." I believe these stories provide historical context for this committee. Now to the 2021 federal election. I'll quote from now public information in my June 17th article for the Bureau, an extended interview with MP Aaron O'Toole. In the published interview, I told Mr. O'Toole, quote, "I have reported about this January 2022 Privy Council Office intelligence report sourced from 100 CSIS reports. What the document said is that a small number of MPs in the 2021 election reported concern for their families, their privacy, their reputations, and their re-election chances as a result of targeted CCP activity." Mr. O'Toole answered, quote, "That's very troubling to hear. I'm not surprised because when I was briefed on the examples of intelligence that were shared with me, some of the activities were so intense in the Greater Toronto Area and the Lower Mainland of British Columbia, it would not surprise me if people were followed, tabs kept on people, intimidation, voter suppression." I questioned Mr. O'Toole again, saying, quote, "I learned from sources aware of CSIS investigations in 2021 that CSIS officers found that Chinese officials in Toronto were following one MP during the campaign. They were also allegedly approaching voters in relation to this candidate, and CSIS found this activity, I was told, coordinated and alarming." Mr. O'Toole answered, "Well, that seems to coordinate or correspond completely with the fourth element that I included in my speech in the House of Commons, which is one clear example of voter suppression in a riding in Canada." Finally, I'll quote from the preamble from my interview with Mr. O'Toole in my article. In it, I explained that I personally received a CSIS threat brief in 2021 after my book on Chinese foreign interference in Canada was published. I wrote in my June 17th article for the Bureau, quote, "A CSIS officer met me in Ottawa. I was told that Chinese security agents in Canada are dangerous, and they were tasked to look into my background, study the impact of my book, and to discover my reporting sources," end quote. I believe this information provides important context for the committee that the Chinese Communist Party seeks to influence or intimidate journalists in the same way it seeks to influence or threaten Canadian politicians.
That was Sam Cooper of the Bureau.News testifying at the House Procedure Committee at Parliament on June 20th. What do you think? Email Bob at TheBreaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. My guest this week is Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch. He has had an interesting couple of weeks with Canada's most famous Freedom of Information request. He received a mostly redacted package from the RCMP. In the covering letter, the amount he said that they were still investigating the Trudeau Liberal government's SNC-Lavalin scandal from 2019. But then the Mounties' story changed, and the federal government's story changed. This happened before the House of Commons' summer holiday began, and before the all-party committee studying the access to information system released its report that recommends sweeping changes to the National Public Records Law. A law that is nearing its 40th anniversary, a law that the Information Commissioner says is definitely showing its age. Duff Conacher from Democracy Watch, walk me through this whole situation of what you wanted to find out from the RCMP and then what they told you and then how things changed and snowballed after that.
Sure. Thank you, Bob. The RCMP said in August 2019, after the SNC-Lavalin revelations came out about pressuring the Attorney General, then Attorney General Jody Wilson-Raybould, to stop the prosecution of SNC-Lavalin. That came out in February 2019. There were parliamentary hearings. The Ethics Commissioner investigated, found Trudeau guilty of violating the federal ethics law by improperly furthering SNC-Lavalin's interests by pressuring the Attorney General and also essentially directing other cabinet ministers and members of the cabinet staff and Prime Minister's office to pressure Wilson-Raybould and her staff to stop the prosecution. So that was August 2019. The RCMP said then, we're examining the situation seriously, and then hasn't said anything since. So we wrote the RCMP in February 2021 and said, where's the update? It's been, at that point, it'd been a year and a half. Nothing came out of that. So then in June 2022, wrote another letter and formally requested the investigation record. And I did that because the Conservatives had had success with an access to information request to the RCMP for the investigation record of the investigation into the Aga Khan's gift to Prime Minister Trudeau and his family of the trips to his private island in the Bahamas. And so I thought, well, if you can get those documents out when an investigation's concluded, file the access to information request and see if the what they say. A year went by, lots of delays. There's a backlog of requests at the RCMP. Filed a complaint halfway through in January 2023 to the Information Commissioner because of the delay and non-response from the RCMP, because they're supposed to disclose records within 30 days or ask for a reasonable time period if they need to do an extra long search or there's a bunch of records they need to review. And then all of a sudden, May 25th, the RCMP sent off this letter to the wrong address, not the kind of mix of addresses, not Democracy Watch's actual mailing address. And I received that in mid-June and was looking through it and realized, oh, it says that they're redacting, they sent a 96-page record. 86 pages were redacted, and it said in the letter, they're redacted because of an exemption in the Access to Information Act that allows them to hide documents about an ongoing investigation. And it said, a review of the records revealed that this matter is currently under investigation. the matter that we had requested records about, which was the investigation and the allegations that Justin Trudeau, Finance Minister Bill Morneau, some members of their staff, former Clerk of the Privy Council Mike Awernick, obstructed justice by pressuring the Attorney General to stop the prosecution of SNC-Lavalin. So I sent it to the media on a Friday, the 16th, and some of them followed up with the RCMP over the weekend and through the Monday, the 19th. And then the RCMP, late afternoon of the 19th, issues a tweet first and then a statement to the media saying there is no investigation ongoing. The letter was not based on information at the time, the May 25th letter that they sent Democracy Watch. The investigation ended in January without a finding that anyone should be prosecuted.
When they say things like, we cannot give you documents because there is an investigation, it's quite serious. These letters are vetted through multiple departments and multiple people up and down the chain, different offices. And for the RCMP to tell you that it was under investigation at the time, that was information that you could take to the bank. And yet then their story changed. Were you surprised at how that happened, at how it changed into different in different ways, how they went into damage control?
Very surprised, because as you say, it's not only an official letter, but there's 96 pages attached to it, 86 pages of which are redacted for this one reason, that the matter is currently under investigation, citing the clause of the Access to Information Act that applies to ongoing investigations. So, they have to have checked with the investigation unit, said, what records do you have that can be disclosed? And then why wouldn't we disclose them in the same way that we disclosed them when the records were requested of the investigation, about the investigation into the Aga Khan gift to Trudeau and his family? And they would have gone through the whole process of going back and forth and saying, well, yeah, here are the records, but it's an ongoing investigation. We can't disclose it because it's ongoing. And it actually says in the letter, once the investigation and any related court proceedings are concluded, you may resubmit your request for the investigation record. Because once an investigation is closed, you can get a summary of the investigation and some of the information out, not personal information about witnesses and things like that, but just a summary of why they concluded what they concluded. Obviously, if the investigation concluded with a prosecution, that's going to be done publicly in court. But if it concludes with a decision not to prosecute, then all there is the investigation record. So, that's what they said. And they then issued a statement on the Monday that was kind of vague, saying the information in the May 25th letter was based on what the Access Information Branch had at the time, investigation concluded in January. Then on Wednesday, the media were following up on this vague statement saying, what do you mean exactly? And on Wednesday, they issued a much more clear statement and said, the information in the May 25th letter is incorrect. Investigation's been over since January. In 90 days, they're going to re-review these 96 pages and maybe other records, and within 90 days, provide them to Democracy Watch, because the only reason they withheld them was because the investigation, they said, was ongoing, which was an incorrect claim by the RCMP. So it brings up so many issues, one of which is, okay, the investigation ended in January, so then we should have been able to get the investigation record right after that. Of course, they'd have to do a review. It might take a month or so, and maybe redact some personal information of witnesses, as I mentioned. But otherwise, that should have come out in February, early March. And instead, we don't get a response till end of May, and it's incorrect and misleading. Very, very curious. And we are now going to chase after more details. It just raises so many questions about how this happened. So Democracy Watch is filing an access to information request to find out what happened with our access to information request. Who reviewed it? Who approved the May 25th letter? What communications were there? All those things have to be disclosed. And hopefully we'll find out who did what when and how it's possible this 4 to 5 month out of date letter with incorrect information was sent to us.
Access to Information, Privacy and Ethics Committee of the House of Commons, the all-party committee, after studying for many, many months, recommendations on how to improve this law, in some ways, how to save this law, which the system in many ways is broken. But going through this experience that you have in the past week, what would you do if you could change the law as it is?
Yeah, well, this RCMP example shows just how broken the system is. And if the RCMP was committed to transparency, and this is common across a lot of government institutions, and to effective law enforcement, first of all, there would have been an independent special prosecutor, and they would have overseen the investigation by the RCMP. Even better, it would have been investigated by a provincial police force, because the RCMP is so tied to the Prime Minister's office and the federal cabinet that they really lack independence to do this properly. And then that special prosecutor would have been made a commitment that as soon as the investigation's over, we'll issue a public explanation if we don't prosecute anybody. And that's the way it should have been done. So I wouldn't even had to file an access to information request. It just all would have come out proactively. The committee made a lot of key recommendations in their report that if they had been in place would have helped the situation. They recommended, and these are top priorities of Democracy Watch. We made a submission to the committee, called for 18 key changes. One, overhaul information management systems in ways that increase proactive transparency, as I was just mentioning with the RCMP, so that things come out automatically. Require records of all actions and decisions so that people can't make a decision just verbally. So there's no actual record of it that can be tracked down and traced to hold people accountable if the decision broke some rules. Apply the law to cabinet offices in all public institutions, including all publicly funded institutions. There's a whole bunch of government agencies that receive public money that aren't covered by the law. Limit disclosure delays. The committee said if you want to go past 60 days, you'll have to get the law should be changed, so you have to get permission from the information commissioner to delay disclosure more than 60 days. Empower the commissioner to override secrecy if it's in the public interest, also known as it's called the public interest override. It would apply to all the secrecy loopholes and just say the commissioner can override it if the information should come out, if it's in the public interest. Give the commissioner more independent funding. Have the commissioner funded by Parliament, not by the government, because the government has an incentive to not give the commissioner the funds needed to actually effectively and in a timely way enforce the law. And importantly, as well, and all these are important, but this one's really important, to establish compliance measures and penalties for violations so that, you know, someone did wrong in this RCMP situation, but no one's going to be penalized because there are no penalties for violating the Access to Information Act unless you actively destroy records. Other than that, you can delay things as long as you want, and that's why they do. And you can refuse to disclose records people have a right to. And that's why lots of institutions do that, because they can with impunity. There are no penalties other than, I mean, there's an information commissioner's report that might order you to comply with the law, but no fines. And the committee recommended fines. And then that would really set the cat amongst the pigeons. People would not want to be fined. So they would say, you can't do this, it's going to break the law, and if you're going to do it, put it in writing that you're ordering me to do it, so you pay the fine. And it would just change the whole dynamic. Right now, it's a higher chance of getting caught, and you'll pay a higher fine for parking illegally anywhere in Canada than you will for violating this key democracy law, the transparency law. And that's true across the country. And that's perverse, because when you park illegally, you usually don't damage anything unless you park in front of a hydrant and there happens to be a fire. But you'll pay a higher fine for parking legally than violating this key democracy law and pretty much all the other democracy laws across the country as well. There are no penalties because politicians want power without accountability, and so do government officials. So They put in place these laws, but they don't put in place effective enforcement or penalties for violating them.
Well, on that note, thank you for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch.
Thank you, Bob. And hopefully the opposition parties will act and sponsor a bill to make these changes if the government doesn't. We'll see what happens in the fall.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Japanese delegation to visit Taiwan next month. 12-member group will meet with Taiwan president and opposition party leaders. Mahira Seiji, the former foreign minister and senior-level member of the Democratic Party for the People, will lead the group to meet with President Tsai Ing-wen. Seiji called Taiwan an important friend that shares common values with Japan, such as democracy, respect for basic human rights, and the rule of law. In the Kyoto news, woman in Japan dies of Oz virus in world first, possibly tick-borne. A woman in her 70s died in Ibaraki Prefecture. The virus was discovered in the country in 2018. The woman went to a medical institution in the summer of 2022 after developing fever and fatigue. She was diagnosed with pneumonia, but was hospitalized, and an engorged tick was found on her upper right thigh. She died of inflammation of the heart after almost a month in hospital. In the Hong Kong Free Press, salute! Hong Kong police officials launch accounts on Chinese social media platforms. Apart from social media, Hong Kong police also interact with fans in mainland China by sending letters and signed portraits of the police chief. Hong Kong police have opened an account on Chow Hong Shu, a Chinese social media platform similar to Instagram, after the city's security chief and chief secretary earlier launched accounts on the same platform. The Hong Kong Customs and Excise Department has also set up an account on Douyin, the Chinese version of TikTok. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Everett Herald, Boeing, UW, and NASA deny design partnerships with OceanGate. Wazoo Everett and Everett Community College severed ties with company. Their denials have raised questions as to whether OceanGate overstated, misrepresented, or exaggerated the role they played, if any, in developing the experimental vessel designed to take high-paying customers to the Titanic wreckage. On Thursday, the U.S. Coast Guard said the vessel suffered a catastrophic implosion. Could families of the five dead sue? Well, if the waiver said the sub was rated for 13,000 feet but was actually only safe to 5,000 feet, that would be fraud. Founder Stockton Rush, who died in the disaster, and a 2018 lawsuit by an ex-employee claimed that OceanGate ignored safety issues. In the Oregonian, Oregon Health and Science University must pay $430,000 to PETA in Drunken Vole's legal fight, judge rules. The case began in late 2017 when OSHU researcher Andrew Ribenin published a journal article finding that alcohol weakened the partner bond between male and female voles, but had little effect on aggression among male voles. In 2020, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals filed a lawsuit accusing OHSU of failing to provide videos of the experiments, which were funded by almost $2 million in federal grants in response to public records requests. In the Times Colonist, Citizens Assembly to examine amalgamation inches forward. 48 members will be randomly selected, 27 from Saanich and 21 from Victoria. In 2018, voters in both municipalities agreed to explore the costs, benefits, and disadvantages of the amalgamation of Victoria and Saanich. But after the municipalities settled on terms of reference in 2019 and 2020, the initiative stalled during the pandemic. It got new life last spring when Victoria, Saanich, and the province agreed to evenly split the $750,000 cost of exploration.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The virtual to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
Filipinos of British Columbia and Italians of British Columbia. June is both Filipino Heritage Month and Italian Heritage Month. So a special salamat to members of the vibrant Filipino community who are listening, and a special grazie to members of the vibrant Italian community who are listening.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 25th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 25th of June in 1993, 30 years ago, progressive conservative Kim Campbell of Vancouver was sworn in as Canada's 19th Prime Minister and the first woman on the job? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.